Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Unri, and boy, do we have a great episode for you guys today. It's episode 118, and we got an awesome guest. His name's Clive Freeman. He's dishing out the real deal about getting into tech. This isn't your typical tech talk. We're getting into the nitty-gritty of what's real and what's just hype in cybersecurity and how to sniff out those scams. Plus, Clive's going to share some wisdom on how to stand out in the tech crowd with legit skills and certs. But wait until you hear about his wild ride from crunching numbers at Fidelity to coding his way up to the tech ladder. Talking about a plot twist, huh? And yep, we're going to talk about life at the layoffs, making bold moves like Clive heading to the big old state of Texas, moving to Dallas. We're not stopping there. We got stories about social media showdowns, mysterious Twitter feuds, and all the drama you didn't even know existed in the tech industry. Clive's been through some stuff, and he's laying it out all in the open. He's also going to give us his two cents on why tech spaces are looking more like lifestyle blogs and how we can bring the tech back into the conversation. Plus, he spills the beans on what it really means to be in a tech job and why diversity in tech is about more than just a trend. Expect some laughs, a bit of ranting, and a whole lot of truth bombs. Oh, and if you're just dreaming about becoming a software engineer, Clive's got the roadmap you've been searching for. So kick back, plug in, and get ready to be entertained and enlightened by this episode of Textual Talk. Now enjoy the show. All right, welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. Well, I'm your host, HD. It's episode 118. And we have with us today, guys, Twitter's favorite tech. I'm going to call him tech troll because I can tell when he's trolling, but others can't because they just don't want to like him. But we got Mr. Clive Freeman in the building, everybody. So if you have him right now, give us a round of applause for making this happen. We've been trying to do this since he went viral. And I'm really mad, though, because he went viral, but them people didn't follow him. Like, that's weird.
Wow.
But he rocking with us here today on a Saturday. If y'all was listening on Patreon, we didn't have some, like, in-depth discussions that actually could have been the whole pod, but I had to reel it back in. We can do our Cat Williams stuff just yet. We're going to let them unravel. But, man, Clyde, how's it going today?
Man, doing good. You know, can't complain. Just, you know, living life. Oh, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Doing what I normally do.
Mm-hmm. So, before I mess with you and you introduce yourself to the audience, man, let me tell the audience too. I don't know if I just said it, but remember, subscribe, thumbs up, hit all and everything. If you're listening right now, Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you know what to do. Leave a review, share it out, follow the podcast. But real quick, could you introduce yourself to the audience and kind of let them know what your background is right now?
Yeah, sure. So obviously you introduced me before. My name is Clive Freeman. So, you know, I don't have a traditional tech background. So I started my career in finance. I went to school for finance, business admin. Was kind of doing that for about seven, eight years, working at various financial firms, doing financial planning and forecasting at various companies, both private equity. I worked in private equity. Utility companies, and my last company before I left was actually a financial services firm. It was there that I actually caught the coding bug, if you will, because, you know, I was a spreadsheet jockey, Excel sheet jockey, and kind of like, let me automate my workflow. So that's when I kind of got into using Excel macros. I got into kind of automating the data and migrating the data to a PowerPoint spreadsheet. And then, you know, doing all this kind of gave me a lot of free time to think about what I wanted to do, since a lot of the workload, a lot of the tedious work was kind of automated. And I kind of found myself liking the technical piece of financial analysis. So I was like, maybe I try my hand at doing this full time, like my full time job. So that's when I kind of like started, you know, on going on YouTube, going on Google, just researching how to break into tech. Because at this time, this is when tech is starting to bubble up. It's starting to get to the place where people think they can get into it. Obviously, people know that there's a big money in there. So I'm like, I can do this. I kind of always been technical my entire life. And I decided to make that leap. And I say it's a leap because I was making great money. I had a great job, great company, great benefits. And I was like, if I don't do it now, at this time, I think I was around 28, 29, and I was telling my friends, I was telling my family about it. They were like, you sure about this? And I was like, yeah, because I know if I stay here any longer, I get a promotion, I'm going to have golden handcuffs, and I'm not going to want to make that leap. And, you know, so from there, you know, I joined the coding boot camp, and the rest is just history. I've been doing this ever since. So it's been great. And I'm really glad I took, you know, that leap of faith and really invested in myself, because if I didn't, I'll probably, you know, I think I'll still be living a good life, but I definitely wouldn't be as happy as I am now.
Appreciate that, man. I didn't even know you had a finance background. Mm-hmm. You care to name that finance company?
I work for Fidelity.
Okay.
Investment.
Hey, Fidelity's a good company.
It is. That's what I say.
Because even if, like, for example, I'm in cybersecurity, specifically the blue team, they pay them well. Mm. And good bonuses and stuff too.
It's a great company. Trust me, I didn't leave because, you know, I would have stayed, to be honest with you. The bonus was great. The company culture, my team was great. And they operated more like a tech company. People don't
know that. They do.
They had a thing called Fidelity Labs, where they were experimenting with a whole bunch of, you know, this automated technology, AI. They had like this little small startup incubator within the company. So they were doing some great stuff.
Yeah. I think what a lot of people don't know is in finance, a lot of those finance companies are snatching up the software engineers and everybody else, machine learning, AI, data scientists, data analytics. They're getting more technical. I think, what was that? Was that JP Morgan Chase? I used to work at Chase, but I think I saw an article that was saying they had more engineers than like some of the FANG companies.
Mm.
And I believe them because Chase is pretty huge.
Yeah, because if you haven't noticed by now, like a lot of the companies are realizing that the machine can do what these stockbrokers, these stock traders can do in a fraction of a second, all day without getting tired. And they can make more decisions and obviously based off empirical data rather than emotion. So the machine, it's all logic, right? So there's benefits to that. So that they're realizing that. And then obviously the speed and the efficiency gained with that is can't go back. So
right. They're
leveraging that early. You know, I know AI is big now, but these companies have been doing this for a while now.
So you all the way from, what is the nickname for Boston? Like, what do black people call Boston?
I don't know what black people call Boston. What we call it, the Bean? People call it Bean Town, the Bean. I don't even call it the Bean Town or Bean Town. I call it Boston, right?
I'm finna crack a corny dad joke. Like, do you like Boston baked beans?
No, I don't. I don't think I really even eat them like that.
I like Boston baked beans.
People say that all the time, like they're good. I've had them, but it's not like, oh yeah, that's like a, I think being back in Boston is more like seafood, right? So you get the New England clam chowder, the lobster.
Y'all real big on what? Old Bay and stuff like that, using Old Bay? Or is that a Baltimore thing?
I think it's a Baltimore thing. I'm not a cook, so I'm bad on that. But no, I think that's a Baltimore thing. I think it's more so seafood.
Where is your Boston accent?
We don't have Boston accents. By the way, let me give you some background. I'm from Boston, but I'm particularly from a neighborhood called Roxbury, right? So Roxbury is like...
Ain't that where New Edition them from?
Yeah. So it's a black neighborhood, right? So that's why people say, are you from Boston? I didn't know black people lived in Boston. I'm like... My whole life, I'm like, all I grew up around is black people. So it's a black neighborhood. But I will say this. A lot of, you know, people who say that because, you know, you think of Boston, you think of like, you know, what's his name? Ben Affleck. You think of the dude from the Bourne Supremacy. What's his name? Matt Damon. You think of that. You think of the Wahlbergs, right? They don't really show Roxbury. So when people say, oh, black people... Because they don't see that that part of Boston, right. But it's there. Like Boston's one of the few majority cities in the nation. People don't know that.
Yeah. Funny thing is, so a show I used to watch was called Survivor's Remorse, and they were supposed to be a family from Boston. It was Tashina Arnold.
Oh,
whatever my guy was. That do you watch The Boys on Prime?
Oh yeah,
the dude show. That's the fast dude. So Jesse T. Usher or something, whatever his name is.
Yeah, I know you're talking about
him.
A-Train, right?
Yeah, A-Train. The dude who played, what's my boy's name? He played a lot of stuff, but like most people probably remember him from playing one of the sister's boyfriends on Sister Sister. Not the dark-skinned dude, the other one. I can't think of his real name.
Mm.
But him and the other chick, but her name was like M-Cat on the show. But anyway, they're supposed to be based out of Boston, and they try to make them have like talk like they're from Boston. The only reason I say that, though, because the first 2 years of my tech career, I worked. Help desk for TSA. So I've talked to people at the Boston airports before.
Logan. Yeah.
So I was able to know, okay, you from Boston. Oh, this person. Because it's like, it's similar to people that's in New York.
Really?
But it's a little bit different. Like when I was like talking to somebody at Logan or then if somebody coming in from LaGuardia, I could tell, it's very subtle, but I can tell the difference.
It's funny because people say that. I went to HBCU for the first 2 years of college. I went to Hampton. And everyone was like, oh, yeah, you got a Boston accent. And I'm like, I do? Because I say Boston, like, I feel like everyone else has it. I think that comes with, I'm going to say this because no one I know has a Boston accent that I know that lives in Boston. The people who have Boston accent are white people who live in certain areas, right? So especially if you have like an Irish background.
Yeah.
So if you live like in South Boston, they call it Southie.
Yeah.
Or you live in like West Roxbury, like or some parts of Cambridge. If you have like one of my ex-girlfriends, it's like she was Irish and her family's from Southie, but she lived in Cambridge. Cambridge is like where Harvard is, like right across the bridge from Boston. It's
okay.
A city called Cambridge, where actually Harvard is. And she had the accent. She's like, Ka, you know, she's saying, I'm from Boston. You know,
it's
like,
she had
that accent to the T.
Yeah.
And that those people have it really. But if you're black, usually, or you're a minority,
yeah,
not really.
yeah, that's cool, man. So briefly, so I would say, so you got into like want to move pivot into tech around what, 2018, 2019?
Yeah, I'd say officially 2019.
Okay.
I was doing it in my first professional career was in 2019, but I've been doing it since 2018.
Okay. And so I heard you say one of the magic words. You said boot camp. So, well, actually, I want to ask you this though first, right? And this is why I want to ask you this, because you're a person that I would presume, because we talked before this, that you were making really good money already in finance. Mm-hmm. I have people sometimes where they're making good money in their career, but they want to pivot in cybersecurity or something like that. However, sometimes the jump isn't what they're looking for. And
as far as they are increasing salary or?
Yeah, it's like similar sometimes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're not willing to say, well, I'm not, you know, I'm just finna do nothing laterally and move, you know, lose some of my benefits that I have. And which I understand, because sometimes there are extenuating circumstances you can't really much like make a move for. But however, well, most people sometimes aren't getting the same salary.
Yeah.
But then some people may be making more, but realize they may have to take two steps back to go to get three steps forward eventually.
Yeah. And that's what I always say. People think that, you know, career progression is always linear, right? It's always a linear arrow straight up, right? That's not the case. And I'll do a brief story about when I was in finance, right? So I was working at a utility company before I went to Fidelity. And again, crazy company. My mother worked there, she was a director. So I had a little bit of clout there, you know, it was comfortable, but I wasn't happy at all. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to go to Fidelity or any financial services company because I feel like it could challenge me more. So when I got Fidelity, it was actually a pay decrease of about $5,000. We salary transparent here, right? So I don't care about my salary. I'll tell you what I make. So it was about a $5,000 decrease.
That's not that bad.
But the bonus was better. So all in all, it was more money in the short term because I got a sign-on bonus when I came, and the bonus was generally better. But it was initially a pay decrease. I decided to go with it because I know that it was going to set me up in the future, right? So that's the same way I would suggest people look at if you want to transition into tech. It's going to be a short term. This is not even the case 100% of the time, that it may be a short term back. You know, you might have to see yourself downgrading or taking a step backwards in your career as far as your salary expectations go. But you have to see that forward vision. You have to say like, okay, I did my research, so I knew long term that being in tech and being in the role I want to be over the long term, I would be making more money than if I went to the traditional financial route that I was currently taking. So when I was at Fidelity, I did the research. My case was a little bit different because I actually would be making more money when I transitioned to tech, right? But in the short term, and we can probably get into this a little bit later too about the exact boot camp I went to.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that eventually.
Yeah, so the boot camp I went to was it's a beautiful program. So I'm going to shout this program out. It's called the Prenti. And it's a national program. Basically what they do, they, you know, a lot of, you know, labor unions are people who work in like plumbing, electrical, to have unions. And the way they kind of like onboard their employees is they do an apprenticeship program. So you work under a journeyman and you pretty much learn underneath them until you're ready to take that position as well. So what they do is they apply that kind of same model to the tech industry. So I went for the software engineering path. So part of that was, obviously, I had to quit my job. So that meant that I would be out of work for, I think the boot camp they put you in is 4 months. So I would be legit unemployed for 4 months. The thing that I lucked out with is that the company that was sponsoring me was a company that was generous. So I got a stipend. So during the boot camp, I got a $2,000 stipend. So it alleviated the blow. At this time, I had a condo, you know, so I had to support myself, I had a car, blah, blah. So that helped a lot. But most people don't have that kind of background. Some people don't have that stipend. So what I would suggest in that case would be for people to kind of like brace for it and just know that there's light at the end of the tunnel. That's all I can say. I know a lot of people wouldn't have made that sacrifice, but you know, it worked out for me in the end. But back to Apprenti. So basically they're a national program that, like I said before, they kind of like use that apprenticeship model for tech. And basically what they do, they put you in a boot camp for 4 months, 3 months, depending on the track you're going. They have multiple tracks for cybersecurity. I think they have like UX design now, software engineering. You can go on the website. They'll tell you. And basically what they do is the beauty of the program. I think this is the number one reason why I went to the program, because they guarantee you a job after the training's done, right? So you go from the boot camp and then you go to on the job training after the boot camp for at least a year. So when I was done with the boot camp, I immediately had a job. I already knew who I was going to be working for. And that was the beauty of it. So I had the job for a year. We can get into, you know, the actual job later on, but after the year, I was let go. And you know, that started my unemployed or my fun employment journey. And actually it was a blessing in disguise, because I was actually able to connect with some people that I met from the job, and we started a new company, and you know, we can get that later.
Okay. That's a lot. First of all, you said it's called Apprenti?
Apprenti. Yeah.
Apprenti. I'm going to cut this section of the video up, send it to y'all. That way, if y'all want a sponsorship, we put it right here. So y'all can go ahead and send me some of them ad dollars that y'all guarantee people jobs with. But what made you, and this is kind of funny because I'm laughing in my head asking you this kind of stuff, though. Out of all things, what made you want to be a software engineer?
To be honest with you, because I looked at the salary. So money was a big one. I was like, hey, I can make some big money doing this, right? You know what I'm saying? For the lifestyle I wanted, obviously, you know, I grew up wanting a nice house. I wanted a nice car. So I knew that becoming a software engineer, the salary expectations were there for me. And I always been a techie. I always been a geek. I always been a nerd. So I've always been into, like, you know, science fiction. I always been to anime. I've been into the video games, hardcore, superheroes, comics, all that. So kind of like, it was kind of in my realm to be kind of techie and hands-on with gadgets, period. And I felt that, you know, just being a software engineer, you know, put me in the forefront, put me right in the weeds of technology. And like I said before, when I was working on Fidelity, I found myself that I actually had a technical expertise and an aptitude for it as well. So those three factors basically put me in.
Did you ever think about trying to be a software engineer for Fidelity?
Yeah, I did actually. I actually talked to some of the engineers there. The only thing that made me hesitant about it was that I knew that there was like some, you know, I feel like the transitional process would have been longer instead of me just leaving. Right. So when I left, I could just be one instead of, you know, going through the red tape,
the ringer,
and transferring and getting permission from managers and then doing training. With Apprenti, I was already guaranteed, so I was like, got it, I'm just going to leave.
Yeah, cool. Now, I'm glad you told that story, though, because we talk about investing in yourself and money, and we have people all the time, like, quick story, if you follow me on LinkedIn, you're watching this video right now, so you already know it's sponsored by Level Up in Tech. Shout out to my guys over there. Mm-hmm. They have, like, the most testimonials that they post for getting people into tech, especially they deal with getting people in cloud computing. Mm. And I post pretty much an advertising form on my LinkedIn, and I have two negative Nancys on there who don't normally interact with me. So I think I made a story the other day on my Instagram and told people, like, hey, keep it cute on LinkedIn. Just keep it cute, because they have some type of thing that I guess they got to, with the actual program, and they just felt the need that they had to come on there and say dumb stuff like, oh, what's the price? And do you get VA tuition and all this other stuff? Like, bro, like, if they do or they don't, why do you care? Like, all this different things. Like, I tell everybody, say, it's more than one way to skin a cat. Everybody can't get in for free. Some people need a strict curriculum and something they need to invest in to keep them accountable to get to their goal.
I agree.
Because it was somebody the other day, I think it's the guy, Kenyon. He was talking about how all the people who booked his free spots for consoles didn't show up. And I was like, that's the reason I've always charged. You're going to respect what you pay for.
Yes. Totally agree with that. Because when it's free, there's an expectation. There's like a evaluation on it, right?
Right.
If it's free, people don't value it as much. Because if it's free, it can't be too valuable. But if you put a price on it, people, unfortunately, they assign a higher value to it. Because I had to pay for it, so I'm going to go to this. I can get my money's worth.
Right.
That's just what it is. It sucks, but that's what it is.
Right. Yeah. And then, like, in this case, this same person, we got acquainted with each other because one time they were saying something about, I don't know, whatever somebody was charging for a resume or something, but I was just under the assumption, like, hey, whatever the price is, it don't matter, because if they pay that $1,000, $1,500, whatever they're paying for the resume, but it gets them a job that they get like a, you know, $20,000, $50,000, $30,000 increase, they got their return on investment back. And so everybody's just always trying to tell somebody what they shouldn't charge or this is too much. And then they want to say, oh, well, I'm going to do it for free. And the same person tried to do it for free. And them's like, I wasn't prepared to take all these calls, so I'm shutting down the calls for now. Exactly. Like, everybody always trying to, like, be a superhero and then realize, like, you're going to burn yourself out. You're taking too much time for yourself. This same person, too, gets on my nerves because I don't like people like this. They'll always try to flex how long they've been. Oh, I've been... Because I think he does software engineering for like the NBA or something. I don't care. Hopefully he's listening. I've been here 25 years and doing this. And I'll be like, bro, don't nobody care how long you've been in the game. What they got to do with me? I've been in 10. Like, you can't just, I don't care how long you've been there. Everybody got how long they've been in there. That's not like, okay, so this, like, I don't need this. I do know for a fact this can help people. That's the reason why I'm advertising it. If you don't, you know, if you don't think it can help people, go on. There are people who make more absurd claims and I don't go on their post and comment on it because I'm like, that's their post. If I got something to say, I'll bring it here or whatever. But I was just like, I don't like that. I've dealt with that on TikTok before. People just acting like, oh, well, people reported to, I used to run socks and all this other stuff. I'm like, so what's that have to do with anything that I'm saying? How does that negate what I'm saying to you? Like, stop. Like, you come off as a cornball.
That's what happens when you're in social. Trust me, I learned my lesson.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it. So initially you would say your journey from, so what was your like actual title again in finance?
In finance, I was, I think it was FA, I think it was FA three. So that's a financial analyst three. So, but I worked in FREC, right? So I worked in Fidelity Real Estate Corporation. It was like a side company, Fidelity.
Okay.
So I managed real estate portfolios across the U.S.
Okay. So you would say you went from financial analyst to software engineer in about, what, like 15 months?
So,
because I know you, it said 4 months for the boot camp, then like a year for the apprenticeship.
Yeah, but I was doing it before that. Like, I had joined the boot camp prior to that as well.
So, oh, so you did a, okay. So Printy was an, was the second thing you did?
Printy was the second thing I did.
Okay.
And I just happened, it gave you the job. I really, personally, I didn't need to go to the boot camp because I was kind of doing it on the side anyway. I was coding on the side. I went to a boot camp previously, like legit.
So which one you went to?
I did both.
No, which boot camp?
I went to a boot camp. It's a local boot camp in Boston called covesquad.org.
Okay.
Called Cove Squad. So I did that. So I kind of did that. And then I was self-teaching myself the whole time. So when I got into Apprenti, it was like, okay. Because Apprenti was mainly for people fresh, no coding experience. I just happened to have the coding experience. So when I did go to the boot camp, I kind of like went through the boot camp just for the heck of it. But I had kind of already knew my stuff. So that what made me like kind of like top of my class at the point because I did it already. I've been doing it for like that point, maybe a year by myself. And I was like basically self-taught at that point.
But okay.
It just reinforced some of the concepts, so that's why.
Okay, cool. No, but I was just saying, like, you just got on YouTube University one day and say, oh, cool, I'm going to do these projects, and I'm going to...
That's what it takes. Like, I remember going on Craigslist. I got a MacBook, a desktop Mac, and I just started doing HTML, basic HTML, CSS, just that. Just HTML, CSS, you're doing basic form, having a title on the screen, doing a hard reload, practicing with the form fields, and, you know, doing basic stuff. Like, the first thing I did was ugly. It was turning the field red or something like that. So that's all. I didn't even get into JavaScript until later. I was just like, okay, this is cool. I never tell my girlfriend, like, look what I did. Look what this form field I built. You know what I'm saying? It was simple, looking back onto it, but that's how I started. And from there, I just obviously progressed. I kept at it. And for me, like, I always say, like, I'm equivalent to, like, Goku from anime, like, from Dragon Ball. Like, I always want to improve. So, like, doing that wasn't enough for me.
Man, you know, all you have to do is just start yelling.
Yeah, power enough. But, yeah, that's basically what I was doing, though. But in the tech field, I was like, okay, this is nice, but I always want to get better.
Right.
Obviously, I was seeing, you know, what other people were doing online. I was seeing these crazy stories about, oh, I learned to code. Now I got a yacht now. Like, you know what I'm saying? Okay, I need to get on that level right now. So that would push me to keep on doing it, even on the weekends. You know, it helped that I was broke at this time because I was like house poor for my condo. So, you know, I would stay in the house and this code and,
okay,
and research stuff online. So.
Do you see the meme sometimes you're a programmer now. You program Hello World. Now you tell everybody you're a programmer.
Yep. That was me. That was legit me. I was like, word, I can see it on the screen. That's what's up.
Yeah, I made a little calculator. Okay, cool. I want to switch it into this this thing real quick. So now you are senior.
I'm an SC3.
And I don't want you to say where. I don't want you to say where only because to protect you.
Yeah.
And so I don't waste my money and have to take this down or something, because that's happened to me in the past. People have said where they worked, and then somebody like, hey, you said this, we don't like it, you got to take it down.
Yeah.
And even though technically I don't have to because I don't work for them, I don't want nothing to happen to you at work just because I don't want to take something down. So.
Yeah. So let's say at mid-level, depending on
the company.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's funny enough that you said that. That might be a topic or a solo episode one day. My friends and I, we were all talking. It was like how you could be senior in one place, but that's not senior somewhere else.
Yeah.
Or like you may be principal somewhere, but that's not staff somewhere else.
Exactly. So the levels get kind of wonky when you can go from company to company. So let's say at mid-level.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, your title is senior, though.
No, it's SC3.
Oh, okay. Got it. I want you to talk about kind of what you do now. I guess, okay, let's briefly talk about, let's go back. Let's talk about that company that y'all started. And then I guess that should lead to what you do now, right?
Yeah.
Whenever you move to Dallas.
Yeah. So I moved to Dallas because I was laid off at the previous company I worked at. So I kind of always wanted to go to Texas. But I was like, this is the perfect time. I'm fun employed. You know what I'm saying? Like,
what's that term mean?
Fun employed? Basically, I'm having fun, because if you notice, the brokest people have the most fun. So I did have
a lot of fun when I was laid off.
Exactly, right? So
I shouldn't have been having fun. Should have been in the house doing Uber or something.
Yeah, trust me. Like, I see people, they may not be fun employed, but they're like, they're broke and they live the best life. They traveling to Dubai right now. So
they scamming.
I was like, okay, look, I'm fun employed right now. You know, this is a perfect time for me to kind of like do what I want to do. I'm not kind of bounded by the golden handcuffs that I had. And I always wanted to go to Houston. A lot of my friends lived in Houston at the time. I visited plenty of times. I had a good time. But then I was like, okay, I want to get a job. I want to be in tech. Houston's maybe, you know, I had a girlfriend. So I'm like, maybe that's not the right place for us to be at the time. So then we decided to go to Austin. So Austin's a tech hub.
Right, Atlanta.
Right. I visited it the year before in 2019 for 4th of July. I had a blast. I'm like, okay, I can live here. Boom. We pack up, rent out my condo, and then we drive, take the 30-hour drive down to Austin, into our apartment unseen. Right. So we start doing it, and I'm starting to apply. Boom, boom, boom. Now, at first, you know, I'm applying. Then the application process was crazy because, you know, I was getting rejections on a regular basis. It was really, you know, at first I was like, whatever, I'm getting unemployment. I got the STEMI check. I'm actually getting paid more money than I did when I was working. So I wasn't stressing. I was going on the lake every day. I was living life. But towards the end of the 6 months, I was like, okay, I haven't got a job yet. Like, what's going on? I'm supposed to be in a tech hub. You know, I work for a reputable company. My resume, I got 1 year of experience at least. Like, you know, I'm good to talk to. I can speak. I can sell myself in interviews. What the hell's going on here? And at that point, one of my product managers from the last company I worked for, you know, we can call it the purple company. He reached out to me and said, hey, I got a new venture with this startup that me and the other guy are trying to do right now. We would love to have you kind of help us, you know, build the V1 of the app. And I was like, perfect, because this is a way for me to kind of like fill in that gap that would be in my resume. I'm actually doing actual development work, and it would help me because at the time I only had one year experience. And, you know, working with a guy that I enjoy working with, you know, another black guy who does excellent work, Calvin. So I was like, perfect. Met the other co-founder, Martel, and then we got to work. So we got to work. We built the V1.
How much they paid you? Because I know you had to get paid.
No money.
So it's like all back in.
All back in equity. So I didn't get paid anything. I was just doing this off the strength of, you know, believing in the vision and the company. Obviously, I had the equity. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, I built that up. And then eventually, you know, we had a CTO at the time, but then he had another venture. So then he kind of went to do that full time. And then I kind of got like, you know, moved up to acting CTO, and where I was like managing operations. And at that time we had, you know, obviously secured some funding. We actually got into a program called Tech Stars, which was like the number two accelerator in the country. So we got some additional funds, and then we were able to kind of hire a team. We had an offshore development team of about six engineers. We had two front end, one Android, one iOS, one web developer, and a couple back end guys, and we had a PM. All right. So my day to day became managing those guys. So okay. That's how we got into that. So
you was in tech.
Yeah. Yep. So that's what that was. By the way, the name of the company is called Soko, or was called Soko. And basically the aim was to kind of like democratize the referral process. So right now we kind of noticed that the referral process is kind of monopolized.
Referrals as into what?
Employee referrals, like any company. Right now, I think most companies have an employee referral program where you get like a kickback. You may get $5,000 if the person's successfully hired. And what we found out is that most people get hired by referrals because... Yeah.
About 70% of jobs like come from like your network, and then some that don't even get posted.
Your network, right?
So they post it just because they got to, but the person who's supposed to already be there is going to work there.
Exactly, right? So we was like, why just keep this in companies? Why would we just not open source it, basically? Like, so anyone could refer someone for a company. So the theory was that companies would post on our platform, and that people who were on our platform as well can refer people that they knew for the job. So it's basically an externalized referral program for everybody. And the premise was that a software engineer would be a better vetter of another software engineer.
Right.
We noticed that a lot of HR recruiters, and I don't want to hate on the recruiters, but sometimes they don't know enough to accurately vet somebody.
I think that's most recruiters. I mean, some of them got the keywords they go through, but I think it's most because you just don't know what you don't know.
Yeah. So I had a recruiter say they know what Swift was, and they were recruiting for an iOS position. So it's things like that where they're on the sheet, and you say your spiel, you know, they give you your elevator pitch, and they're like, okay, I heard Swift, check. I heard, was that Xcode? Okay, check. And he said variables and properties. Okay, I think he's good. That's what the process is. So we was like, a cybersecurity person is just knows the lingo. You can kind of feel it when someone's talking to you, even if they're saying all the good words.
Right.
You, since you're in that field, you kind of can call BS where a recruiter couldn't call BS. So that was the premise of it. Unfortunately, obviously, you know, startup stuff, it ended up imploding or we went our separate ways. But that really gave me the experience of not only building a V1 product, because I was knee deep in the code, but also the whole development life cycle as far as, you know, what goes into crafting great software, as far as like the marketing, what we need, product design, UX, how that all flows to create a great product. And obviously managing too, 'cause that's my passion too, managing, you know, especially managing an offshore development team who's not in a time zone, who had different cultural differences. So I learned a lot about that as well. Yeah. And it was a beautiful experience. Like, I love my co-founders. We were four black brothers doing great stuff. So it was a good experience. And I think that's what actually helped me get my current job. not my current job. I had a job before my current job. But that was part of the reason why I got my job. So at one point, I was doing both. So I was doing Soko part-time, and I had a full-time iOS development job at another company.
Okay, that's cool. Now, as you were talking, I was like, man, I wonder if he know that I actually did an episode with a venture capitalist, a black venture capitalist as well.
Nice.
So actually, we got to do a part two because our video wasn't working that good in that remote episode, but he's a cool dude. So now all your roles have just been strictly software engineering?
Software engineering, strictly iOS development in particular.
So that's your niche?
Yes.
Can you develop on Android?
No, I can't. I could probably learn it. I've been like, actually in my day job now, I create tests in Kotlin, but I would not say I'm a Kotlin developer by any means.
Hold on, what's that?
Kotlin's the language to develop for Android.
Okay. I don't know. And I'm trying to educate, like, you know, because it may be somebody out there that's watching and say, I want to be in software engineering. Mm-hmm. And I don't know much about it. So it's you. And then I got another friend who used to work at Amazon from do software engineering. I think he broke in to Fang, like, from a boot camp too. So nice. like 4 years ago. So he's
Been in the game for a while then. Okay.
Yeah. Well, he'll be on eventually. He's in Austin now. He moved. Well, he had to move to Seattle and then he moved back down to Austin. Well, we're both from Shreveport. So that's what makes it pretty cool.
Yeah. The boys. Okay.
Yeah. But so I want to ask you this. If somebody wants to be a software engineer, what's, you kind of give them like a high level roadmap, right? Because my generic advice can still work for everybody, but I'm not a software engineer. And I know what I tell people that come to me that want to know about software engineering. I'm like, well, I would do this, this, and this. I was like, see, in this part right here, go talk to a software engineer.
Yeah. So what I would say, if you want to become a software engineer, I definitely think it's so broad. It's so broad. First, I would say figure out what you want to niche in, right? So I'm a software engineer. That's a wide umbrella, right? I think you have to dig down a little bit deeper on what you want to do. Do you want to do web? Do you want to do mobile? And then, or do you want to like back end, right? So that's like the three kind of like other sub umbrellas under the software engineer umbrella, right?
I've always heard the term back end. What is back end? What's front end?
Front end is what the user see, and back end is what the user doesn't see, but that has all the business.
Okay, so all the code and stuff is in the back end, but the front end.
No, the data. The code's on the front end as well.
Okay.
The back end is like usually holds all the data. So when you sign up for something, your name, all that data, that's what the back end holds.
Okay, so you're more so working with the databases and connecting all that stuff.
Yeah,
okay.
like that stuff. So but once you figure out the sub umbrellas you want to get into, then usually you have to say, do you want to do front end? Like if you're in web, you want to do front end, you want to do back end. If you want to do mobile, you got to figure out, do you want to do cross platform development? Like do like something like a Flutter, which you can develop in Flutter and then have it both, have your app on both platforms at the same time, or you want to go native. Do you want to develop specifically for mobile? I mean, Android or iOS. So these are decisions that you have to make before you even dig down any deeper. Right. So, but once you do that, then you have to decide, okay, what are you comfortable with? Right. Cause you gotta, all of these things take learning a language. Right. And everyone says like you learn one language and it'll be easier to kind of learn other languages, which is very true. It's very true. My first language I learned was JavaScript. And I think that's what made it a little bit easier for me to learn Swift because I already had the basics down. I knew about variables. I know about objects. I know about inheritance. So those are kind of the bases that translate regardless. And you also got to figure out what do you want to do as far as like, what do you want to build? A lot of people say they want to be engineers, but I always ask you, what do you want to build? And that usually will tell you what path to go down. Like if you want to build a web app, then you want to be a web guy, right? Probably full stack. If you want to build mobile apps, then now the decision is like, do you want to do iOS or Android? And then once you get into that, you got to really figure out, you got to have the language syntax. You got to learn the language. That's going to be the first thing. So learn the language and dive deep and like immerse yourself in that ecosystem. So for example, I'm an iOS developer. So I'm in tune with,
you see, you got an Apple Watch on.
Apple Watch, you know, I mean, I have to be in tune with what's going on with Apple. So I attend WWDC, which is Worldwide Developer Conference.
He has the Vision Pros in his trunk.
I wish. I'm broke. I can't afford that. I wish. I have interesting opinions on that as well. But I would just say, you know, obviously pick your niche you want to go into, learn the syntax, and then build. You have to build. And that's what we're going to get into a little bit later about how I feel about tech. I really put a high emphasis on builders and people who create in the space. And I feel like that as a software engineer, that's another thing that actually attracted me to software engineering because our work is very tangible. So we get we get instant feedback because when you're a software engineer, it's a verb almost. You're doing something, you're building, you're creating. So when someone says they're a software engineer and they're not building, it's like almost like an oxymoron. How are you a software engineer, but you're not building anything? So I would say,
can you be one and then you're not building anything?
No, I don't think so.
And so a couple of questions too, because you said something that I thought about, because I haven't taken a freaking database class and stuff in a while, but I think I kind of might have understood what you went by inheritance. Is that like something inheriting properties or something that's out the code?
It's basically about, not in the code, it's, how should I say this? It's more about classes, like, so you have objects, right? So
yep.
You have objects. So let's say, let me put it in terms of a dog, right? A dog is a generic thing, right?
Right.
There's plenty of dogs, right? But you can have a dog object, and every dog has four legs. Every dog usually barks. and they have fur. Those are the three objects in that. The three properties in the object, right? Now, when it comes to inheritance, you can have a different type of dog. So let's say we have a Chihuahua, yeah. right? The Taco Bell dog, right? That Taco Bell dog or the Chihuahua object will inherit from the dog object because we know a Chihuahua has fur legs.
And bars, tail, right? 2 years.
Yep. So it's going to inherit from the generic dog object. But then at the same time, a Chihuahua can have certain special properties that only apply to the Chihuahua itself.
Got it.
But that's more about inheritance, right?
Yeah. No, that's a good analogy. That's kind of along the lines of what I was thinking, but I definitely want to be able to explain it. But I just knew, I was like, inherited, it's getting something from somewhere, but I just got to figure out where it's coming from. So that's dope. Then you said, I believe you said full stack. I don't know if the audience knows what full stack is, because I think one of the boot camps out there is called Full Stack Academy or something.
Yeah,
like that.
I think there is. Like full stack is just basically doing the back end and the front end, right? So the back end obviously is the data logic, usually the data and the business logic and storage, whereas the front end is basically the user, what the user sees. So basically, like I said, UI, the UI logic, and basically like the user interface, how that looks, right? And being an iOS developer is heavy on the front end because obviously you got to build the user interfaces, right? Mm-hmm. So it's heavy front end, and mainly what we do is we consume back end. So we get the data from a server, or a cloud, and then when we get it, we just mutate it, and then we mutate it and transform it into a form that the user would like to see, like the UI component. So when we make a call, you want to see like your timeline, right? So the UI having your icon in a circle with a border around it, and the text be bold, and the subtext be gray. That's the kind of work we're doing, but we're making a call to the service to kind of give us that raw data.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, I was like, you guys work a lot with the UI UX team?
Yeah. In my day job, yeah, we do a lot. Okay. So we talk to them, especially when it comes to any new feature that we're doing and it requires a new type of component. So that we have obviously designers who design everything, but then we also have a development team that specializes in creating those components as well.
Got it. Might have to bring Justice up here for a UI, UX, software engineering type of role. So, all right, man, real quick, high level, what's your day in the life like of being an iOS engineer? Like, are you able to go get your coffee and walk the dog and stuff?
I actually have a beautiful schedule, actually, because my company is based on Pacific, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm 2 hours ahead of them.
Right.
So, and I have a son, so I'm always up early, right? So I'm up at least 7 o'clock this time, CST, while my team is like sleep. 5 o'clock, sleep. So usually my day in life is like get up, make him breakfast, change his diaper, get him dressed, and then take him to our babysitters, a.k.a. his grandparents. And then I'm back probably by like 8:30. So 8:30 to 6:30 at that time. So that's probably still sleep. Then I make myself breakfast. And then I'm probably at the computer about 8:45, 9 o'clock. And then I sign on, but I don't say that I'm on Slack. So like my dot is still clear. From there, I would catch up on emails, which I'll just see what happened. See what my meetings are for today. And then I go on the Jira board, see where my tickets are, and I to start trucking on whatever ticket I have at the same time. But I like my schedule because it gives me that free time unbothered. Excuse me. It gives me that free time unbothered to kind of do heads down work without anyone slacking me, pinging me, or emailing me. So I get like at least I'll say an hour and a half of that kind of free time that mm-hmm. some of my coworkers don't get, because when they get on, usually everyone else is on. Mm-hmm. So that's day in the life. Like, then I'm coding most of the time. I get a lot of heads down work time, but obviously there's meetings as well. There's obviously we have stand up.
So you got the daily stand up, the scrum meetings.
So we have the way we do it is we have stand ups not every day.
It should be honestly it should be really no more than 2 a week, maybe, to me, in my opinion, unless it's like something that's very important that you got to know about it every day.
Yeah. So I guess we kind of have that kind of system because we have a Zoom stand up. Right. So we're a distributed team. So we have the Zoom stand up 2 times a week. So we have it on Monday and Wednesday. We have you be on camera and you say your update. And then we have.
Any impediments?
Any blockers, right? If you have blockers.
Man, I hate them words. That's how you say. Hey. for the listeners and the watcher, you watching this right now, let us know you're in corporate without saying you're in corporate.
Yeah, OKRs, KPIs, you know the corporate mm-hmm. jingle. But so we have that, and then we have two Slack stand-ups where you just write what you're doing on the Slack. So that's on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And Fridays, we don't have it. So that's pretty much what we do, which is, you know, this is like 10 minutes, if that 10, 15 minutes on the Zoom stand-up. And obviously, the Slack stand-up, you just write what you write. And then once we do that, then we might have some meetings. Obviously, we do the scrum ceremony. So we do a retro at the end of our two-week sprints. Do the stand-up. We do... And then after that, it's just meetings, depending on what product you're on. You might have, you know, you might have sync meetings with the PMs to kind of align on the feature in case there's any updates or anything like that. And then you might have, you know, your coworkers just want to sync up. Maybe they need some help. We have an automated testing suite that every sprint someone's dedicated to doing the automated regression testing. So we have like stuff like that. But I would say that's the day in the life, but. So it's a combination of, you know, going to meetings, keeping, you know, the stakeholders, the PMs up to date with your progress, obviously via stand up and via those sync meetings with the PM, the product owners and stuff like that. But yeah, obviously.
Okay. And then this is the last question directly about work. So what is like a ballpark range of like, you know, your total comp?
A ballpark range of my total comp right now? Let me see. I'll say 175.
You think it's 175? Is it all in?
All in, TC.
Okay. Mm. That's not bad going with only what, year four?
Year four, yeah. Year four, yeah, yeah. Four-ish, yeah.
And I don't know if it's like either you got stock or you got bonuses.
It's a combination of base, stock, RSUs, and bonus.
Yeah. So technically that can kind of change from year to year based on how well the stock performs and the bonuses. Like bonuses sometimes can get paid out at different rates too. So depending on how good the company does.
Yeah. So that's definitely a factor as well. So yeah.
All right, man. So the moment everybody's been waiting for, listen, let's get into some of the fun stuff he said. Let me go to my bookmarks, y'all. I know y'all been waiting for it. Let's see where it is. Oh, man. Okay. So, on January 10th, 2024, Mr. Clyde Freeman III said, "The leaders of Black Tech Twitter are people who can't code. That's the problem with the space. When the majority of your leaders are tech adjacent and influencers, that's when you know you messed up in the game."
Ooh, that's spicy.
And hold on. Look, hey, y'all. We didn't even know each other at this time, but right under his comment, you see me saying, "Hey, come elaborate this on the pod with me. You can get it off your chest there." Cause I think there are a lot of things people have assumed with this tweet. So, man, that thing got like 10K looks. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It went viral and I didn't really expect it to either. I was just going about my day, you know, tweeting how I normally tweet. This wasn't like a special tweet to get engagement. This is what Clyde tweets. I don't know what day basis, somehow it got picked up and the algorithm just went off with it.
Yeah, man. So let's talk about it. What prompted you, I guess, to say that? Or what are you seeing on your timelines that maybe others aren't seeing and they feel also a way about?
Yeah, so you know, I've been seeing this for a while, so it wasn't like, okay, that day I saw something that triggered me. It's something that I've been seeing for a while now, ever since I, you know, got in the space. And when I say the space, I don't mean, you know, the tech space. I really mean the this space around Twitter, this Black technical space around Twitter. I noticed that a lot of people really are like selling courses. They're really promoting lifestyle content, and they're in tech, right? They're in tech. And I realized that a lot of these people, a lot of the major voices that I was seeing on my timeline, your timeline may differ, but a lot of them weren't technical, right? So I always say, like, I found that the space was the most non-technical tech space I've seen in a while. And I mean, me and a couple of friends, we discussed this, you know, this on the phone behind the scenes. But then I saw a tweet, and you know, everything was going on with with the layoffs and anything like that, and it's this me seeing these people just talk about tech, and I'm like, you don't know what you're talking about because you're just an influencer, you don't really have that in the field experience. You're not building, and that's fine. Like I said before, I managed a company. I was a CTO. I know how the different parts need to come together to craft software. So that's fine. But I just felt that there was a misbalance as far as the people giving the message and exactly what the message was, right? So the space is skewed, and I see it in my my personal life. A lot of time when I go to these mixers, I'm like the only engineer there. If I'm not the only one there, it's usually one or two of us, but everyone's like a recruiter, everyone's like a PM or a business analyst. Like, if you're an engineer, you're the minority in the room. So I kind of noticed this, and I'm like, why is this the case? You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of what spurred that tweet. So what spurred that tweet is really not to denigrate, you know, people who aren't engineers. I think that's what people kind of took from it. But what I think I really, really trying to call to, I want more people in the space that are technical. And I think that goes into a way deeper than that tweet. I think it comes to upbringing. I think it comes to making tech sexy again. I think that's really, really comes on making tech sexy again. And making it more accessible. I think that's the main thing. So making it sexy and accessible, I think that would change the perception of people who want to get into tech. And another, this anecdote from my personal life, people all the time come into me and say, hey, Clyde, you know, they see, you know, I'm doing well, you know, I got the house, I got the, you know, they see the Tesla, oh, I want to get like you, bro. And I tell them what I do, they're like, oh, word. And then, no, I'm not lying. As I tell them what they do, then I'm like, oh, you're an engineer, man. That's cool, man. I wish I could do that. But, you know, that's too much for me. And then in my head, I'm like, why do you think that you can't do it? Like, I'm no tech savant. I'm no rock star coder. I think I'm pretty mediocre, to be honest with you. But I think that if I can do it, anyone can do it. And I'm not just saying that. Like, people who know me will tell you, like, no. Like, if I can do it, anyone can do it. And I feel like people think that they come into the game saying, like, I don't want to do engineering. So what they do is they say, let me try to get into tech the most non-technical way I can. That's what I noticed. So they'll try to get in doing anything but technical stuff. And I think that needs to change.
So it's like a lot to unpack there, right? I think number one, what's happened over the last 4 years is people have been conflating the tech industry with like tech jobs, because you could be in tech in a different industry because your job is in fact technical. So that's one thing. I think it also depends as well as, like I said, I think what people consider to be non-technical is subjective, because like my last episode with Terry, I would consider Terry a very much so technical, non-technical person. Like, she probably is not the person doing the implementations, but she's very skilled at what it takes to do infrastructure projects in a tech space, because she did it so long. She started rambling off different things. I said, I know she knows her job. That's why she's a technical project manager. So I think it's different things. I think some people did get offended because maybe some people have just built their whole persona about, oh, I'm in tech type stuff. I do know. So, and I'm with you. So there are two things. There are people who've been in for a while, who they probably are doing their lifestyle thing. However, they have a track record of before that blew up of showing, hey, I did this for X amount of years. This is what I started as. There are those. Then are the people that just came, and they've just been deemed a leader because they got popular fast and they show the stuff that they have, which is not a hating thing. Like, I don't like care about what nobody got going on, because at the end of the day, I'm going to always do what I do no matter what. But I think, like, when you say technical, you know, it are different things, right? Because, like, if outside of, you know, a software engineer, you got security engineers who they do their technical part on there. Like, I'm not an engineer right now. They have something like in a blue team called detection engineering, where you can pretty much work on detections. And that's something I'm going towards, just because it's just another skill set to add to the utility belt. Yep. But even in my roles, there are certain things you have to be very skilled at to understand the problem, like especially if you're dealing with something like incident response. Like, so I think a lot of people just felt the way about, oh, you're not building nothing. You ain't Bob the Builder, so you're not in tech, so you don't.
Oh, yeah.
I think I don't say some people might have been insecure about it, but I think some people took a slight at you saying they're not building and the gamers messed up, and feeling like, you know, hey, no, my contributions matter. Because, like, at the end of the day, people want to feel like they are providing value. They're doing something. So even the non-technical program managers and all those other people, they want to feel like, hey, now who are you to tell me that what I'm doing is not important? Who are you to tell the left guard on the football team mm-hmm. that I didn't help Pat Mahomes stay upright to throw the touchdown?
Yeah. So, understandable and totally understandable. And that's why I'm here to clear it out, right? So when I say technical, you know, that software engineering isn't the end all be all for what's technical. Okay. I just want to get that in the air right now. What I meant by technical is like, I consider anyone that has to have a specific technical knowledge on something technical, right? So that's the cloud engineers, that's the cybersecurity. I even include UX designers in that.
Yeah.
I always say that if I wasn't an engineer, I'd be a UX designer. UI, UX designer. And it goes, there's other ones off the top of my head I can't quite really think about right now. But yeah, I agree with you. I think some people took offense because they took the tweet as, okay, you don't code, you don't build, you ain't shit, basically. And that is not what I'm coming at. I'm coming at balance, right? So everything I say is balance, right?
Yeah.
I just said it's skewed. That's for like most of the people who have the biggest voices in the space aren't technical. And when I say aren't technical, I mean the ones who have never been technical. Not like people who did, like, well, let's say if I stopped coding right now and became a PM or something like that. I'm not talking about people like that. I'm talking about people who've never done anything coding at all, don't want to necessarily, and don't have a passion for it. So their perspective is valid, don't get me wrong, but their perspective is kind of skewed because they've never been in the field. You know what I'm saying? Like, to bring up an analogy, I would say it's like being on the football team, like you mentioned before, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that go to being a great football team. You have the players, the coaching staff. You know, then beyond the coaching staff, you have ownership. You have the franchise people managing the franchise. You have the people on the sideline. You have the water boys, right? They can all say they're part of that football team. Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. But you also have to acknowledge the differences in the role players on that football team. That's all I was saying. Like, you wouldn't say that, you know, the football player, if you had a discourse about football, and then most of the people who are talking about football are like coaches and the coaching staff and the people who manage the players, and there's like one football player. You're like, hey, can we get some balance here? Because he's actually in the field. He kind of, his perspective is kind of important because he's actually doing the work.
Yeah, but I think it's different though, because we just saw the game just come down to coaching. The mm-hmm. coaches are supposed to set you up to put you in good positions to succeed. So like some of your non-technical parts that have the direct influence on whether resources or different things you need to make your apps or build stuff, they are set up to help you succeed. So it's just one of those things, like everything kind of is like that circle of life. Like it has to... How everything moves will depend on how functional the other things go. Now, sometimes I think we've seen a bad coaching where, hey, if the person on the field is saying, hey, I see this, why you keep on trying to tell me this? And they run in cover two and they are literally blanketing this guy over here. Stop trying to tell me to do this route. If I check into this post, it's going to be wide open. Stop telling me that. I know what I'm seeing. Mm. So we got that option too. So I get what you're saying too. I think it just goes on both hands of...
But my thing is different too, because this is, I bring it down to this. Could you have football? Could you still play football without the coaches?
Yes.
Could you play football without the players? No. That's what it comes down to at the end of the day.
I think that's a good one, but I guess in regards to what you mean, like play football without the coaches.
If you're playing the Super Bowl right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the coaches drop dead,
mm-hmm.
would the game still go on?
Yes.
The reverse, it wouldn't go down.
But who gave the players the plays?
The coach gives the players, but the quarterback can do it too. LeBron does it. LeBron's a player coach.
Yeah, but if we're gonna go on that straw man argument, then we gotta say who's the person that started all the plays just from the jump, from the root of everything. So it's like, how
they can do that though?
No, but I'm saying, how do they know? Like, because that's the thing too. Sometimes them players aren't making good decisions because
sometimes the coaches aren't.
Let's just, bro. All right, bet. Since you want to go that route, well, let's talk about people playing football in the hood. Automatic two. Everybody running nines. Like that's what it's going to turn into.
I disagree with that because I think like at this point, I think that the breakdown, like for example, like in my company, right, we don't have certain roles anymore because we realized that the engineer can do those roles. For example,
we were talking about that last part.
We have no scrum master.
We were talking about that last part.
Because we can do that. We don't have any dedicated QA because we do the QA ourselves, right? And I think what people are fearful is that companies are getting leaner now and that they're realizing that, hey, some of these jobs are kind of fluff where engineer can just do those jobs. Yes, it's a little, you know, more time on their plate, but the engineer can do the job as well. So that's what I think is the case. Like, especially with someone like me, I could do the UX too. I could do UX design too. I could do the Scrum. I can do all those jobs. I'm just an engineer. And I feel like that's what we're seeing with the layoffs. They're becoming lean. And then when companies come lean, what's the first to get chopped off? Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. And I'm not degrading that. I'm just saying that's what it is. And this gets into the concept of flat techness. I don't think anything should be flat techness. Yes, you're in tech. I'm not discriminating that. You're in tech, yes. But it's the difference between being a technical worker and working in tech. Anywhere I go, anywhere you go, you're still going to be a tech worker. You can work for a farming company. You can work for a ballet production. You're still going to be a technical worker because the nature of your job is ingrained in it. If I'm a salesperson, if I work for farming, I'm in farming. I do sales for farming. I'm not a technical worker. If you do sales for Google, because what I've noticed is that because of this idea of flat techness, that the janitor now works at the Google building can say he works in tech now. People at Best Buy are telling you because they sell the TV they work in tech. And I think that they have a better case to say they work in tech than the janitor does. But I feel like that's the point that we're coming to right now. And I feel like that it kind of erases the unique the unique journey and struggles that people who are more technical have to go through, right? There's a reason why salaries are different for people who are more technical because there's a higher learning curve. And I feel like flat techness erases that. Oh, you're just the same as me. Like, you didn't have to learn these data structures. You didn't have to learn these algorithms. You didn't have to learn it. You set up a server or database. It's different. There's levels to it. Like, that's all I'm saying. There's levels.
You know what's funny? I'm going through some of your quotes of this. That's why I've been looking down at the people. Like, knowing I'm doing, I've been looking down. It's like, how is this gatekeeping? Do people actually know what gatekeeping means? Because gatekeeping means you're trying to prevent people from doing something.
Yeah.
People use words so wrongly. Like, he's not gatekeeping at all. He's not withholding information from you. He's not purposely not letting you get into the field like they were doing some of us years ago when we first were trying to get in. Mm-hmm. So that's not what he's doing. But I've really been trying to find the quote where you and that person went back and forth, and like, I guess why that they felt they want to get you fired. So that's what I'm really trying to find.
Yeah. So let's get some background on that. So throughout this whole, you know, Twitter fiasco or X fiasco, someone tried to get me fired from my job. And this is a person that purports to be for black tech and for the unity of black tech, but yet they try to get a black man fired from his job so that he couldn't feed his family anymore off of tweets that maybe a disagreement among ideas, but definitely nothing that deep for you to, one, look me up, two, find me on LinkedIn. I'm assuming you find me on LinkedIn. Find my job. Find out the number to even report me on a job. I don't know how to even find that number. So you're doing some research to find this number and to report me. And the only thing I can think about is, like, obviously this person's a coward. She's a coward because she blocked me. One, we weren't following each other from the beginning. But when I found out, I was like, oh, I'm blocked too. So you're going to do some coward move, report me, and then trying to hide behind blocking me. It was pure cowardice and really just shows how, you know, people really aren't what they purport to be. Excuse me. And I really, like, that's not my first, like, really experience of someone that took it to heart like that. Yeah, I had the discourse.
Because they could have, she could have just blocked you from the jump.
Blocked me from the jump and kept it funky. But the thing is, this person lives, like, this person has no life.
Clearly. They might got a crush on you.
Either that or they got no life. I think this person has no life.
What if that's not even the person? What if that's like a fake page? And they're saying what if they're impersonating the person they say they are?
It could be. Could be, but I think it's a real person. They have no life. Clearly, they got no man because they had enough time to do that. Clearly, you ain't getting what you need.
So, I'm looking at, like, some of your old tweets, like, kind of like the journey he was talking about. So, I have them bookmarked. Like, in 10, 11, 12, he was saying breaking into tech right now, super hard. The climate just getting harsher and harsher. Then he was talking about you just released your first app to the App Store, putting a lot of work, finally obtained the title of senior iOS engineer.
Oh, yeah, on previous company, yeah.
Yeah, and then you were talking about you had an interview for the iOS engineer job. Am I ready for this role? Who knows? But I ain't going to tell myself no. That's their job if I'm just trying to climb. But this is another funny one that people got. Well, it was, I thought it was this one, but you say we're down at the point where anybody can sell you a pair of AA batteries and claim they work in tech.
Yeah, that goes back to my flat techness. I feel like, you know, like no one, and Mina, another person on X was going back and forth with this as well, is that no one else has the same issue. No one plays these games in medicine, right? No one plays these games in law. Everyone knows the difference between medical professionals who are like a nurse practitioner, doctors versus the people who work at the front desk or people who like, there's a difference.
So I think you're saying, I get what you're saying though. I do understand. It's like somebody be like, yo, I'm in medicine, but all you do is give me my, what's the thing called when you go to work in case you need it or you went to school?
Was it EpiPen?
No. If you went to school, you had to have this thing to get to the office so they can like say, hey, your absence is excused.
The note for the pad. I know you're talking
about.
Yeah. I don't know what's officially called.
Like you set my appointments up and you give me the doctor's notes, doctor's excuses. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about you're in medicine. No, you're not.
Exactly. And like,
you're in administrative work.
Maybe that's like to a lesser extent, but that's kind of like the same vein that I think this situation is. And I mean, like you said before, I think that people want to feel like they're contributing, which they are. They're contributing. I'm on record right now. They're contributing. But there's still a difference, right? We can acknowledge the differences between the roles in tech and not degrading anybody. There's a difference, right? No one says, oh, the doctor is the same as the doctor who's doing your surgery is the same as the person at the front desk. We know they're different, right? And that's okay. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. But I think now they just purposely do not want to take what you say, like any mirror. It's like, oh, he a troll. And I was like, honestly, y'all can't tell this man trolling. Y'all know he being funny, but he's talking about the AA batteries. But yeah, I couldn't find
obvious.
All the, I
AA
couldn't,
batteries, that was obvious.
Like, but I couldn't find like all the other stuff. Cause like it blew up. Like I seen, I just looked at AP's part. She was just, I think y'all actually had a little decent discourse about it. And so at least some people was like, y'all actually had conversations about it. Everybody else was really to say, ah, man, put your head back down. No social awareness. But it's just like, I know he's like, bro, I big post all the time. Where y'all came from?
Exactly. And I think that also it was weird too, because it was like almost like a,
and you know, they were talking about that tweet like the whole week,
bro. They were talking about that tweet for like a couple weeks, like I'll say 2 weeks they were talking about that, because my boys was like, they're still talking about it. Because I said the word tech adjacent, right? So the word tech adjacent, at first the way they were acting, I thought I made the word up. I was about to make some shirts and put this on some shirts and sell it. That went online. I'm like, I didn't invent this word. This word.
Maybe you should change your display name and not tech adjacent.
Maybe I should, because tech adjacent has been a word and it's not a derogatory term. It's a term that relates to what we described earlier in the show, like people who are in tech, but maybe not necessarily technical workers, right? People who are close to the technical workers and that support the technical workers, right? So it's not an offensive term. So I'm like, why are people acting like that's the boogeyman word, right? And why are people so hard up and trying to discredit me? They was going through like, oh, he's only been doing this for 4 years. You know, he was unemployed for 6 months, even though I was working with Soko for those 6 months. But trying anything, saying that my tweets were misogynistic, that came out of the blue.
I've gotten that before.
Yeah, like I haven't got it. I'm just like, where's the? And then the people are coming at me. I'm like, please point me to the misogynistic tweet. Crickets, because they couldn't find it. I'm like, point me to these tweets.
Most people couldn't even tell you what misogynistic means.
Yeah, I'm like, and then it was so crazy that I was like, okay, I'm just waiting for someone to say this is racist. It was going to be misogynistic. Then someone out the blue is going to be like, yeah, this is a racist tweet. And I'm like, I'm surprised. I didn't get that, but I'm surprised. That was next in the line, though.
Yeah, I'm just looking at some of you. Like, this is funny. I'd be laughing at somebody. It's like, yes, I got some content to talk about. Because there's always some interesting, funny stuff like in here.
That's what I think that's what it really came down to. I think the space needed a villain of the week, and I just happened to match it. I was just happened to be at the right place at the wrong time, and it was like, let's hop on this for a content engagement, because people were tweeting about it. Didn't at me, at least at me. I want some engagement too, but they would do that a lot of the time. And what I noticed is that I'm like, people just were harping on it day and day and night, because a lot of the people, that's what they do. They profit off the drama. Like, I'm like, y'all guys are still talking about this. Like, I'm trying to talk about some anime, what happened latest in Dragon Ball Super, and people are still at me talking about Tech Adjacent. Yeah. And then luckily, one of my boys, I haven't met the dude in person. I think his at name is like Omega or something, right? But he was really a soldier for me. Shout out to that brother, because he was really helping me and like going back. Cause like I was getting sworn, man. Like the minions, I call them minions. The minions were coming for my neck, and I'm like,
who are the minions?
The minions are the people who I think in the Black Tech Twitter space. I think there's like a hierarchy. At least what I've seen, Black Tech Twitter. There's a hierarchy, right? And there's a bunch of followers that people kind of like are lackeys to. Right, I call those people the minions, and the minions can be women, it can be dudes. It's not a gender thing. It's just that they adhere to that group think, and then anyone who goes against that group think is enemy, and they just swarm. So that's what I was the enemy. So they swarmed on me, and that's pretty much what it was. And
he, you know,
was
me
backing me down
when stuff like that happens. I'm like, if that happens to me the day I get swarmed, I'm gonna post. When Bane told Batman, "You adopted the dark. I was born in it."
Exactly, and I think a lot of the times too, I'm like, it was almost like a kind of like a feeling that they wanted me to bow down. Like I had to bow down to the hierarchy. Like, yo, she said something wrong. Do you know who you're talking to? Like, even when I responded to somebody, they was like, "Do you know who, one person? Like, do you know who you're talking to?" I'm like, "Are they royalty?"
I think I know who that person was. I think y'all's conversation did go a little sideways because I don't think they had the understanding of what you were saying at first, and they was like, "Dang, he disrespecting so and so and all this other stuff."
I don't.
But I would say too, you might have just been replying real fast and not knowing who people was, to be honest.
But the thing is, I didn't see anything to show. I said, "Who is this royalty?"
Not that. I don't remember. I know in this specific instance who they may be talking about. I just can't find. I don't know their exact name to go back and see like what y'all was talking about. Because I've did it before. Somebody actually probably been saying something good, and I responded fast and wasn't paying attention to what they said. And they didn't really say something that was ill-intentioned.
Yeah.
So that happens a lot on social media.
But the thing with me, when I'm on social media, there's no hierarchy. I don't care who you are. Like, we talk as equals. Like, there's no, like, oh, this person, like, I don't think they
meant, like, hierarchy. I think they probably meant, like, hey, do you know what this person does? Like, what they have come. It's not in the hierarchy part. It's like, let's say you was trying to talk basketball and you didn't know the person you was really talking to was Kobe, well, Michael Jordan, LeBron, anybody, right? Mm-hmm. So you just was talking about basketball. I'm like, yo, that's LBJ right there.
Maybe. I didn't take it that way, but like you said, maybe I was talking fast, but I still felt that aura of like, do you know you're talking like you need to bow down, peasant. This is a person. Like, no, I don't care about that because the other thing too, I live in real life too. Like a lot of people live life on Twitter. I'm like, if I see you in person, you wouldn't have that energy. We know you wouldn't have this energy. Like I know so many people that I know who tweet that are like back at home and I see them tweet. I'm like, you're not like that. At all.
So you're not that guy, pal.
It's funny. I'm like, okay, but like you exist in Twitter. Outside of Twitter, you are non-existent, okay? So that's what I felt
like. Yeah. And like, and to piggyback off his conversation, him and I were talking about this. We were talking about how getting into tech now is pretty much akin to an MLM. They just change the vehicle. They try to find the easiest way. Well, there are two different things. Like you say, non-technical roles like a tech sales or something like that are easier to get into because it just is. It doesn't require you to have a lot of technical acumen and you can gain some of the skills you need quicker than the technical stuff.
Agreed.
But when it comes to my realm, first of all, the red flag is like if you're telling somebody they can get in a cyber, when it's so broad, it's hard to just say somebody can get in a cyber. But like, I'm going to show you this. Anytime you may see a poster or a photo of somebody that got a suit on that's probably not tailored, but telling you can get in cybersecurity real fast.
That's a red flag right there. It's baggy.
If they're saying if you can land a job in cybersecurity in 45 days with a 6-figure salary being remote, tell them to drop dead. And I'm not going to say what I want to say, but I just show him the picture. But like, this is a harder economy because people who don't have a lot of experience, a lot of you do not get the chances to work remote. So nobody can promise you finna find a remote job. It's got way harder. A lot of people are back in office. Some of you guys who are just starting off actually need to be in office because you're not going to do that well being remote, and you need to go learn to where now you can go somewhere else and improve yourself. But no, it's the MLM game. If you think about your typical MLM person, they will come up and talk to you. They'll sell you a story. If you go to the meetups, somebody's sad and now they're this high earner, or if they're doing stuff on social media, they're relaxing. They're in a private jet. They're working by the pool. Like
they're in a yacht too.
So this is some of the stuff they go into. Now, that's not saying that you can't get some of these things. You just can't get them quickly. A lot of people don't say, hey, it took me years to do this and I had to start my own company to do this and do speaking engagements and this and that. A lot of people, there's only a certain amount of people that say, hey, I get money these other ways that affords me this lifestyle versus the people that don't. And that's because, hey, they are trying to sell you something. And you got to be honest with yourself, too, is like looking at it compared to what it's asking for. Is it going to be doable? Find the people who went through the program and see if they got real names. That's a big one. Because this recent guy is another not this dude, but it's another dude on one of the bigger platforms who's talking about he can get people in cybersecurity in 45 days. I went to his website. I was like, these people, whoever he paid to do these testimonials are lying. They don't have last names. You can just tell they're not in cybersecurity. Like they're reading the script. You look at what he's offering. I said, it just does not add up. It's just too hard to go from knowing nothing. I don't care if you even get into one of the more non-technical spaces of governance, risk, and compliance. It's still stuff you got to know.
Yeah.
You have to ask yourself, without some intense projects and having to get the gab and just knowing somebody, what is going to make somebody want to hire you just because you spent 45 days doing something?
And I think that speaks to something else in the space as well that I kind of touched on in some of my tweets as well. I think a lot of people need to do the due diligence. I think a lot of people are just swept up by an attractive person.
Mm-hmm.
Who says, you know, who has a gift of gab, possibly, who can talk a talk and says a couple of technical words here and there. I think they get swept up by that and they don't want to do their due diligence. Yeah. A lot of these scams could be debunked if you just go do a simple Google search. Just do 10 minutes of research. Yeah.
And some of them aren't even scams. Some of them just really would be more so suited for you if you had some type of experience first. Because it's different. Like, that's the reason why, like, being a software engineer or going to cloud computing or something else that's a little bit more engineering based is not easier to do, but the path is a little bit more linear because you know on most of the jobs because you're going to have to know this stuff.
Yep.
When you have different jobs, it's not like that. It's a little harder. And it's also harder for certain things to get experience doing.
Yes, that's a huge one. That's a huge one. For example, like a lot of like the cloud stuff, like you have certificates, programs, like people will tell you, the certificate programs aren't the be-all, end-all, but I think they give you at least a baseline. Like, it's like going to math class, right? If you take a certificate, that way they know you at least know what 2 plus 2 equals 4 is. You might not know that some of the more intricate ways to get to that, but at least you know that. That's a baseline. And I feel like that's what the certs give you. A lot of these other ones is just based on, like, faith. It's based off faith. Like, he says it, he talks the talk. With it, I think we'll gamble with them, you know what I'm saying? And it's kind of different for like the more technical roles.
Because
you have to either show your work or you have to do a technical assessment. And anyone who's been through those technical assessments can tell you that those are no joke.
Well, now certain companies do this. Like, I sent one of my clients a job to come in at CrowdStrike. And I told him, hey, you're going to have to do the CTF before then. And
what's
like,
the CTF? By the way?
Capture the flag.
Oh, okay.
So it's just a set of questions and exercises you're doing. Because this is a way to detect your acumen of being on a blue team. And he did okay. He came up short a little bit. And I was like, yo, should have reached out sooner. Because like one of the things you got to do at work is like, hey, if you did something after like 2-3 minutes you don't know, just ask somebody. It's okay if you don't know. But I was like, you kind of wasted a lot of time on your own when I could have helped you. And we maybe could at least got you an interview. Still got nailed the interview, but that's the thing too, like where some people are doing like those technical assessments or giving you some real world scenarios. And now, so back when years ago, when I was telling people, hey, you can't lie on your resume. You want to, you're going to find out in that interview, they going back to asking more scenarios. People have been burned these last 3-4 years because people don't want to be honest. I'm telling you, a person to take an honest person who don't know everything over you, just making up stuff and wanting to lie. A lot of people don't get that because some of these programs are telling them, hey, go lie on this and say you know this and that. And now they are on LinkedIn saying, hey, I can't find work. It's been 4 or 5 months. I can't find work. What I'm doing, I did what they told me to do. It's not working.
Yeah.
So those are those things. I asked this person about this one prominent program, and she almost like cussed me out. And I'm like, yeah, I was actually trying to help you and try to see what your resume looked like or something. Yeah. Why you're not getting interviews, but you blocked your blessings. I mean, I guess they made you sign an NDA, but you ain't got to take it out on me. It wasn't my fault you didn't have a job. I ain't tell you to sign up and pay that $15,000,
yeah,
which is not the price. But the thing is, like I said, you just got to be logical with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If 90 days, I don't think 90 days should really necessary. On rare occasions, and I tell people this all the time, you got to have an elite skill set or know people. I've had people in my network that I seen with Patreon and say, you know what, they're going to be good. One of my friends who's he's killing the game now. He's like what, 21? Maybe, yeah, 21, probably be 22 this year.
Oh, a young guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's out of fame right now. And this is over a span since 2020.
Oh, well, he's doing his thing. Okay. He's getting the bag.
Yeah, but he knows his stuff though.
Yeah, yeah.
And I saw that in him. He was one of the few that wanted to put in work. I said, hey, the first full time blue team job he had was underpaying him for the sock. I said, hey, take it, get the experience. I got you. I was letting him know, yo, I got a spot opened up on my team. We're gonna refer you. You'll be straight. Went there. He doubled his salary, left there, got some more salary, and now he's at a fame company. But it don't always happen like that because a lot of people are not willing to do what he did. Like you said, hey, I was down. I quit my job. I did the apprenticeship. I did this for a year. I got laid off. I moved down here. I did this free for 6 months. A lot of people are not willing to do that.
No. Like I said, it's a mix of people being comfortable in their current situation. And when I say comfortable, I mean comfortable. I don't mean like, oh, you're living life. You're not living luxury. You're
just complacent.
You're complacent. Yeah, more complacent. Yeah. And people don't want to take that. And people, like I said, like, I think it's a root cause. We have to tell people, like, your journey's not going to be linear. Most people's journey is not linear. It's a mix of valleys and hills, right? It goes ups and down. Sometimes you take two steps, but then you may take two steps back, but then you may take five steps forward. And you just got to have that faith in yourself because if I was like, you know, I came to my breaking point when I was unemployed. My unemployment was running out. I had no job. I only technically worked in tech on paper for a year because before that I was doing freelance work. They really don't care about that as much as they care you working for a reputable company. So when I was like, I was actually applying for finance jobs. I actually applied for finance. I knew I applied for Lime and I had a case study interview and I applied for the Japanese company. And I was like, it hurt me because I'm like, yo, I did all that work to get in tech and now I got to go back to finance. And the thing is, I'm glad I didn't get the jobs, those jobs, because I felt if I got those jobs, I would have fell back into my complacency. Mm-hmm. And I probably wouldn't be in tech right now if I had those jobs.
There's a saying I had on one of my videos. It's a video I had when I was laid off. But it was titled, well, I made it after I laid off years later. It was like 100 jobs told me no. And actually more jobs than that told me no. I just had only 100 on that Excel spreadsheet that I showed in the video. I said, sometimes the job you want at the job you need. And then I had cut to a part of Devon Dudley saying, oh, my brother, testify. But yep. A lot of people need to hear that. Because even in regular job, man, you really want the job and something don't happen. I have some stuff I'm going to talk about months on down the line about similar situations that I don't want to talk about right now. But it's happened to me before. It just really mean it wasn't a job for you. So without my job searches, my clients or whoever else, I always tell people, hey, this is a process. Some is short, some is fast. Got to keep going and try to keep on getting better. And that's the key to trying to get better every day at what you've been doing. And don't stop. I'm going to give y'all some free game too. But I see like, I'm going to just say a person like yourself who's trying to pivot. Let's say, for instance, I'm pretty sure you still like get better at your coding when you can or whatever. Mm-hmm. Some people will do stuff in cybersecurity where they just learn the skill and this and that, but then they stop. So if they stop, so now when it comes to the interview, they can't explain the stuff because you stopped doing that. I say, you got to do, whether it's 30 minutes a day, an hour, keep on doing it every day.
And this goes back to the passion versus I'm just doing it for a paycheck conversation. I just had legit earlier today when my group tried back at home. I'm like, I tell people all the time, like, I have a personal project, and the personal project does two things for me. Like, obviously, eventually, if it does blow up, I'm going to go with it, but it also keeps me fresh. It keeps me updated to the latest thing, right? So right now, I'm integrating. It's called Herd Travel App, and basically, it's a social group itinerary planning app for trips. So I work on that on the side, and I'm working with the latest technologies because I work for a legacy company, so I'm not as working on the bleeding edge of technology anymore. So this keeps me fresh. I'm adding Gemini, I'm adding AI to it, and it just keeps me fresh so that when people are talking about some of the things that I may not work on a daily basis, I can still contribute, I can still talk, I can still sound knowledgeable about what they're talking about latest in the industry, because I'm actually building it. And I told my cousin and my little boy about this today, because he's a UX designer. He's actually doing it too. Like, he's working on some side projects and building websites or designing some websites for his friends. And I say that all the time. It doesn't have to be like, people, when we say that, people think, oh, I don't have time for that. I got a kid. He has a kid. He has a, we have girlfriends, wives. You don't have to do it all day. Hour, boom. You can do it for an hour. 30 minutes.
No excuse.
Even 30 minutes. Just to keep you fresh. Like, we're not saying be a recluse or be like, you know, the stereotypical idea of what a software engineer is, being a neckbeard basement dweller. No, we're not saying that. But I think, you know, 30 minutes every other day, a couple hours a week goes a long way into, one, you becoming an SME, a subject matter expert. And it's going to pay dividends for you down the line, because a lot of the jobs I've had past the technical interview have been just conversational. Just talking about the space, talking about the technology you use. What's the latest thing you did? How you feel about, you know, what's going on in the iOS development world right now? And if you don't have that relevant knowledge to have to be, you know, to talk about it, they can kind of tell that you're not into it. It's like you being in sports, right? But you don't know what's going on with the Super Bowl. Like, clearly you're not really into sports like that if you don't know the Patrick Mahomes, Travis. Like, you're in this space. That's why I always say immersion matters, because a lot of these conversations, because when everyone's technical, what it's going to fall back on is, I think it's going to fall back on your soft skills, your ability to connect, and your ability to sell yourself. And having that immersion in your industry and in your craft allows you to speak knowledgeably about what you're trying to get the job for, but it also makes you come off as more of an expert than someone else who just can't really sell themselves as much, but knows the technical, but they can't sell themselves as much.
Dope, man. So where can our listeners, well, if they want to follow you, I'm going to tell you how to, you know, proceed with caution, but where can they follow you at?
Yeah, I don't bite. But you can follow me on X, or formerly known as Twitter. Handle name is C3 Freeman. You can follow me on Instagram if you want to as well. Handle is Turbo Trizzy. That's my villain name.
Yeah, man. But I appreciate y'all. We might have to do like a part two so I can really let him like unleash. I feel like was trying to hold back and be PC. But I appreciate y'all for tuning into the episode. Like I always say, man, subscribe to the Patreon. Buy the ebook if you need to help getting the cybersecurity. I'll book a call. But until next time, like I always say, let's stay textual, and we out. Peace.
Peace.